we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Welcome, welcome, our wonderful audience. I love saying that.
You look great when you say it until you give a big, broad smile. And what she hasn't said yet is she's Ginger Bregan.
That's right. And this is Dr. Peter Bregan. And this is America Out Loud, The Pulse, the Thursday edition, which is the Bregan edition.
And that's just a wonderful organization. It comes off the platform run by Malcolm, America Out Loud. Today, I'm going to be introducing to you a gentleman who is a genuine hero. It's not too often that we meet people who are really heroic in medicine. And I'm just really very, very proud to meet and get to work with Michael Palmer, MD. Michael was born in Germany and not too long ago came to America and then to Canada. Now he's in Canada. He has stood up for all the right things at the right times as quickly as any of us. And I'm going to ask him, he's shy about it, but I'm going to ask him to talk about when we begin what he's been through as part of what our interview will be about today. We share something very, very wonderful with Ginger and Michael, which is that when you join freedom and you fight for freedom, you meet the most wonderful people in the world. And that's one of the great benefits of it. He's the first author, and one on the next column is Sukharit Bhakti, whom he knows well. MD, a person we deeply admire, and a whole group of really terrific people, and Catherine Austin Fitz, who's a dear friend of ours. So we have some wonderful connections. The book is mRNA Vaccine Toxicity. It's a very well-made book, and it is has color charts in it. It's a scientific book, but it is written in a way that anyone can understand. It has amazing chapters delving into the depths of what is going on. First introduction is, are mRNA vaccines dangerous in principle, or is the observed harm accidental? This is like the most fundamental question you can start out with on this whole subject matter. So this is a right-on book. It goes through things like the life cycle of viruses. It's a general education. And it goes deeply into the perversion of medicine throughout all of this, and also into the details of the mechanisms involved with the vaccines. It's a very thorough book, mRNA Vaccine Toxicity. Michael Palmer, welcome to the show. And how can people get your book, just as a start?
First off, thank you for having me. I'm really grateful for the invitation. There are two ways of obtaining the book. You can download the electronic copy for free from the Doctors for COVID Ethics website. And I suggest you do that first. And if you like it, then you are free to buy a printed copy. And the link to the printed copy you can find in the book. So you can find it on lulu.com.
That's a great way to go about it. I mean, that's because you want the book to get out into the world, first and foremost.
Yes, exactly. I want it to be freely shared, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I really admire that very much. And we did something which wasn't as good as what you're doing, but it was our version of it. If people bought the book, they got an advanced copy months ahead of time.
A manuscript
as a PDF. And that was our way of getting it out in the world. And then, of course, they could always share the PDF. So we had we just let it loose on the world.
Right.
That way we were able to disseminate the information on the book about 6 months before the final proofreading was done and the final version actually came out.
And we got paid enough to help us really print it and get it all out into the world. One of the things I think that's really good to start with is, if you're willing, is what you've been through, how you got to the place you're at. Your story as a human being is critical for people to hear so that they can be inspired to be, frankly, more like you. So, and I know you're not going to like that.
That is a big introduction. Well, I mean, at the time when the COVID scam was let loose on the world, I was still employed as a biochemistry professor at the University of Waterloo here in Canada. And I understood fairly quickly that it was a scam. I mean, in the spring of 2020, I understood it fully when I asked my daughter, who was at the time working at a children's hospital in Germany, how many COVID patients there were in this hospital, which cared for a population of 180,000 people. And she said they had seven COVID patients. That was supposedly pretty much the height of the first wave, right? So it was April or something like that, or was it March? And so then I asked, okay, so how many of those are in intensive care? And she said one. And I asked, how many of such patients have died in the hospital? And she said zero. So that was enough statistics. And then I then looked into it a little bit more. So I looked at the webpage at the Robert Koch Institute, the German equivalent of the CDC. And they also had already at the time declining numbers of cases, and there hadn't been a big die-off or anything like that. So at that point, it was clear that the entire thing was overhyped. And then very shortly after, we heard that the world could only return to normal if everybody got their vaccine shot, which absolutely made no sense, because we already knew at the time that there wasn't really a major problem in progress. Then the next thing that struck me was that all these vaccines, which were supposed to be developed in great haste, would on top of that also use completely unproven and dangerous technology. And I mean, at that time, it was clear to me that this was really a very sinister plot. I mean, this couldn't mean anything good. And if you, which I have done in my book, actually, if you simply go through the steps of what these mRNA vaccines, which are the most widely used ones, how these mRNA vaccines work, then it becomes clear to you that the end result must be some sort of autoimmune-like attack on your own body. And I understood this before the first injections were given. And another person who understood the same at the same time was my pharma boss, Sucharit Bhakti, right? And this is actually the question over which we, after a fairly long time, reconnected, right? So I had worked with Sucharit in the 1990s, but then when I came to North America, the interaction naturally loosened up, and we kept in touch loosely, but we were not really closely interacting with each other at the time. But over this question, we actually reconnected. So when these forcible vaccinations started, when the vaccination started, and particularly when the vaccine mandate started, I was trying to alert the leadership of my university as to the risks. I mean, by the time they decided, that they would also institute these mandates, we already had a fairly substantial record of damage and devastation and deaths and disease. So I tried to get
the
attention.
From the vaccines.
From the vaccines, exactly. Yeah, yes, we didn't have, that's true, we didn't have a record of a major disease, particularly in the young. I mean, the university leadership is mostly in charge of a very young and mostly healthy population. And in that age group, COVID really wasn't a killer. I mean, this much was clear from the very beginning. So I tried to get the attention of the leadership of my university, but this didn't go anywhere. I actually received literally no response. And I even had into the message which I sent around from the to the president and the deans and the entire chain of command, essentially, including also the faculty association, which is sort of the union of the faculty. I had deliberately inserted a few minor insults there, because you don't typically insult a professor without hearing from him. So this was like the diagnostic stimulation. I wanted to see whether this would work as expected, so I would get some snotty responses, or whether I wouldn't get any responses. I didn't get any response. So I actually knew at that point what was going to come and how this was going to be orchestrated. So then promptly also the mandate was instituted with fairly harsh penalties. So you would be terminated if you didn't comply. So I said, okay, won't comply, do your worst. And at the so they gave me actually one term of reprieve, because I was teaching two classes at the time, and apparently they didn't want the hassle to have to find some replacement. I said, thanks for your warning. I'm going to hand over those classes if you give me some advance notice so that the students won't suffer. So then they gave me an extension for one term, but then the next term it was it. So they just simply let the axe fall. And so therefore in the spring of, in March 2022, I was terminated from my job. So that was it.
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you. I'm actually quite enjoying to be able to use my time the way I see fit, and no longer to be part of the craziness that has gripped academia. I mean, it's in the grip of a cultural revolution at this point, and Waterloo within Canada is certainly at the forefront of the insanity. So it's good to be no longer part of that.
Wonderful. That's one of the best short descriptions of the whole global problem. And it's so good that you could start with a description of Germany for your homeland, because folks, all this happened at the same time everywhere. And yes, there's absolutely no way to explain that except as a very carefully coordinated global attack.
Yes.
And that is the theme of our book. And we don't just push this for money or something, folks. You need to know the story. And in our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, we go into this.
I completely agree with you, Peter. I think you have laid it out very well. We know by now that the virus is a lab creation. What we still don't know very exactly is who exactly had their hands, was doing the hands-on work on the bench, but I don't think it's that important. I mean, we see this liberation of this virus, and immediately afterwards, we see this globally orchestrated campaign of nonsensical propaganda and harmful so-called countermeasures. So it is clear that the virus and these countermeasures are part of one and the same script. So everybody who participates in this in one capacity or other is in on it. And it doesn't really matter so much whether this virus was created in China or in the United States or in Canada or in Europe or wherever.
We know that all the countries are complicit because of the way they behaved, because of the way they forced lockdowns, they forced mandates, they forced the entire college and professionals and students to be vaccinated. It was globally. Exactly. It's very helpful to have that confirmed.
Exactly. They use the same messaging everywhere. It's the same propaganda sound bites, the epidemic of the unvaccinated and this sort of thing. I mean, it's the same BS everywhere.
You know, we have been researching that and documenting that since 2020. But to think of it again, it's like... Yes. It makes my jaw want to drop, even me. And we've been looking at this for so long and we're so aware of it, but to manage that kind of a worldwide operation who are these people? That is unbelievable that they have such control over the nations of the world.
Yes, it is true. But I mean, it is evident simply from the facts. I mean, it is evident. I mean, there's really no other conclusion. I agree with you.
Exactly.
I want to put a little bit more of a fine point on it, because very quickly we knew that SARS-CoV viruses were being made in jointly funded research with Fauci's involvement in labs in both North Carolina and Wuhan.
That's correct.
Along with some other laboratory involvements around the world.
Around the world. Yeah.
But those were the two primary labs that were doing the work.
Okay. But I mean, on the other hand, I mean, there is some evidence that the virus was already out in the wild in September 2019 and so on.
Yes.
So it's a little bit of a question whether this, I mean, this Wuhan lab leak is certainly not the whole truth. So it's quite possible, I think, that other labs were involved, which is why I was phrasing it a bit vaguely earlier.
Well, I'm glad to kind of look a little bit at that, because I think it's interesting and important. And to kind of maybe see if you have anything to add, clearly you can track, as you well would know, the manipulation of the SARS-CoV viruses back to SARS-CoV-1 to the time that the first SARS-CoV so-called pandemic occurred, with just 8,000 people killing 10% of them around the world. Didn't reach U.S. as an origin. It never had an origin in the U.S. But that means that labs all over the world were developing the sequence and playing with the sequence. And we can track the U.S. and China back decades, back to that time in the scientific literature. And Ginger was the one who really first made that known to the world. She found this article published in 2015 showing the Chinese and the Americans being funded in 2015.
We just published an article on our Substack.
Oh, that's why.
Is out as of last Monday. So it's just this week. Look in our Substack, and we've republished the video and the blog that you, Peter, did at the time. Documenting what I had found, which was the 2015 scientific study that confirmed that both the U.S. and Wuhan laboratory were involved in gain-of-function work developing coronaviruses that had an increased ability of infectionality or deadliness. Right. And that work was being done actually very much before 2015, but there was that documentation. We've got to take a break.
I want to add first.
Oh, okay.
So adjust it a little bit, that in that article, it was clear they couldn't make vaccines yet, and they couldn't make them because of inflammatory reactions. Just Michael Palmer, what you were just talking about, that you knew that on, we knew that on, it was obvious. Hundreds of people were lying to us.
Okay, now we got to take a break.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/outloud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Welcome back. This is Peter Gregan and Ginger Gregan.
Hi, folks.
And we're interviewing a real gentleman and a hero, Michael Palmer. I don't have any plan for the rest of the two sections other than to learn more from Michael Palmer, let him talk and maybe discuss things. And do you have any place in mind that something you would love to talk about right now? Maybe you're doing it in your work, maybe something in the past? Because you have a wealth of information.
Right.
I mean, this book, I want to remind people, the book, mRNA Vaccine Toxicity, the first author, Michael Palmer, and marvelous Sukrit Bhakti made a contribution, and Catherine Austin Fitz, people we really admire. Go ahead.
Well, I would like to make one point about this book. And the key message is that not only the COVID mRNA vaccines are toxic, we must assume, because of what we have seen with the COVID vaccines, that all future mRNA vaccines, no matter which microbe they might be directed against, they must be expected to be similarly toxic. So the entire vaccine technology is fundamentally flawed. It is designed to harm, and it will harm no matter what the particular microbe is, whether it is RSV or maybe a bacterial pathogen. Doesn't matter, as long as there is a foreign antigen that will be sneaked into your cells, so the gene for it will be sneaked into your cells. Your cells will make the protein, will presented to the immune system is going to attack and destroy those cells. And this is the key principle of damage. This is the underlying mechanism of damage, which we have seen with these mRNA vaccines against COVID, and that must be expected to occur with any other such vaccine. And maybe I can add one more point. I already made the comparison to autoimmune diseases, right? One severe autoimmune disease is lupus erythematosus disseminatus, or SLE, systemic lupus erythematosus in English. This is known as one of the chameleons of medicine. I'm not sure whether that expression is common in English, but in German it is
very
common.
Yes.
So it is one of the chameleons of medicine, which means the same fundamental mechanism of damage can manifest itself in very many different places and in very many different forms. Underlying is always the same sort of autoimmune attack, but it can manifest as arthritis, as dermatitis. It can be manifest as a vascular disease. It can do anything, nephritis. All the organs can be damaged and affected. These mRNA vaccines were designed to do the same thing, to mimic, to manifest in very many different forms, different symptoms, so that people would not easily cotton on to the fact what was really going on. If they had tried to poison us with, let's say, a cholinesterase inhibitor, then we would all die the same way. We would show the same exact symptoms. We would all die the same way. And even the not-so-bright physicians would sooner or later pick up on it. With these vaccines, it's different. They have been designed to mislead and to just generate a confusing multitude, a plethora of different symptoms, and therefore to disguise the harmful effects. But the fundamental mechanism of damage is simple, it's uniform, and it is general, it is universal, and it is built into this vaccine technology. So if you don't have time to read the book, please take this as the message. All mRNA vaccines must be expected to be very harmful based on simple first principles of immunology.
Wonderful. This is a wonderful description.
That's so important.
And I'm going to be using this description. I think I'll get the transcript and we're going to use your description. That's the two, so far every word you've been speaking is so on target. Now, if people, there are two questions that people will might ask themselves. One would be, well, how in the world they ever got started doing this? And the second one is, do they really want to kill us and why? I think one thing that may be sort of interesting in this regard, you're much more familiar with the science of this than I am, but this platform was developed to kill cancer cells. Fundamentally, wasn't
yes.
it? And isn't
yeah.
that part of the answer to how did they go about making something that would make the body attack itself? They were making antigens that would mimic the cancer and be attacked by their own body. Is that correct?
I think that's part of it, yes. I mean, in the connection with cancer, it is typically a derivative of one of the body's own proteins, right? Not necessarily one that is abundantly expressed in adult life, but it's one of the body's own proteins. Here and with this COVID vaccines or with future antimicrobial vaccines, it is always a completely foreign antigen. So we must expect that the immune response will be stronger. And I think this, what's particularly bad is the combination of using this technology for transporting these genes throughout the body and getting it taken up by the body's cells, combining this technology with the expression of a foreign antigen. So yes. that is particularly deadly. As long as you use the technology, for example, for introducing some other sort of nucleic acid, there is, for example, there's one drug which is called Onpattro, or the generic name is Patisiran. So that is a similar product. So it's also lipid nanoparticles that contain an RNA, but this RNA does not actually trigger the formation of a foreign protein. Instead, it is intended to shut down the production of one of the body's own proteins. And that drug seems to be considerably less toxic. So it is used in much larger amounts. You get approximately 300 times more of the actual entire compound or the entire complex of lipid and RNA, and you get it intravenously. And the safety studies paint a fairly rosy picture as to how well it's tolerated. Now, not that I necessarily trust these studies to the letter, but I think one must assume that this amount is not immediately deadly, okay? So if you injected 300 times more than the usual dose of an mRNA vaccine intravenously into a patient, I think you could expect them to die on pretty short notice. So this other drug, which is designed to suppress one of the body's own proteins, is indeed considerably less toxic, I think we must assume, than these mRNA vaccines are. So the combination of mRNA lipid nanoparticle technology with RNA that encodes a foreign antigen that is particularly devious and predictably toxic. It is predictably harmful.
How about say a little more about the liquid nanoparticle? We've been very concerned about that and writing about it, but you have such good insights.
The lipid nanoparticles, yeah, well, okay. I mean, one striking feature is that these lipid nanoparticles
folks, which are the covering, and why don't you just explain that first? You're really good at this.
Okay, good. So, right. So we have in these vaccine nanoparticles, we have messenger RNA molecules, which are protected by a layer of a mixture of lipids, which are fat-like molecules. And there are different types of these fat-like molecules. And an important function of these fat-like molecules is firstly to protect the mRNA so that it doesn't get degraded after the injection inside the human body, and also to facilitate the uptake into the body's cells, right? If you simply were to inject messenger RNA or also DNA without any covering into the human body, then the efficiency of the uptake of these nucleic acids into the body cells would be rather low. Most of them would simply be degraded outside the cells. So these lipids have the dual capacity to firstly protect the mRNA and also to greatly facilitate its uptake by the body cells. So the mRNA ends up with very high efficiency inside the body cells. Not only that, but these particles also facilitate the traversal of the blood-brain barrier. So they can actually, these particles can enter your brain with fairly high efficiency. Now, when I was still at the university, I listened to several research talks on nanotechnology and this sort of thing, and it always struck me that so many people were obsessing and were trying to break through the blood-brain barrier. Now, why would you want to do that? Is there really a frequent, a common therapeutic need for breaching the blood-brain barrier? I don't think so. Mostly you don't want to do it. And just a very unusually large amount of effort was expended to solve this perceived problem. So I think I understand it now better. I mean, the idea was not to actually develop cures. The intention was to develop poisons. These people who were doing the research were not aware of it. They had been given BS stories, or they were also inventing BS stories that would justify the development of such technology. But from a medical point of view, there really is no proportionate need that would justify this large research effort. So at the time, I wondered about it. I think I have found the answer now. So these particles can actually breach the blood-brain barrier rather well. Why is this important? There are actually quite a few case studies, case reports on people who were suffering encephalitis after being injected with these vaccines. And you have heard stories about brain fog and this sort of thing. People have cerebral symptoms, neuropsychiatric symptoms after being injected with these vaccines. Something is obviously going on inside their central nervous systems, right? And pathologist Arne Burkhardt in Germany, who is unfortunately no longer with us, but he actually spent 3 years investigating the biopsy and autopsy samples of vaccine victims. He found quite frequently that the brain was involved, right? So he found damage to nerve cells in the brain, and also in particular to blood vessels in the brain after vaccination. So that is accounted for by the ability of these nanoparticles to distribute throughout the body. Then, Peter, you already mentioned the connection to cancer vaccines, right? So another aspect of these of this lipid nanoparticle technology was to enable it to spread throughout the body, right? So not only to the brain, but also to other organs in the body, right? The idea is that it should be broadly distributed throughout the body. In connection with these mRNA vaccines, we were told that all these particles would stay at the injection site, right? That's and it may have been to this end, that both of the manufacturers, Pfizer and Moderna, they actually employed synthetic lipids to prepare their lipid nanoparticles that had never before been even tested on humans, never mind received approval for pharmaceutical use in humans. They had never been even tested in humans. So you might wonder, why was that? My suspicion is, it is really only suspicion, I have no proof of it. My suspicion is that with the other lipids, it was already known that they would distribute throughout the body. So it would have been difficult to tell the story that these lipids would stay at the injection site. If you use some novel lipids on which there's no written record anywhere of how they would behave in the body, then you could tell this fairy tale. Now, we know that this fairy tale is wrong because there are actually some, for two reasons, there are actually some animal data that were submitted by Pfizer to the health regulators. Only the Japanese and the Australian health regulators actually shared any of those data with the public, but from the assessment reports written by the FDA and by the EMA in Europe, it is clear that they also had seen those data.
Yes.
So these data showed that even after intramuscular injection, a fraction of this stuff would be getting around the body. And then on top of that, as any physician, any nurse knows, even if you try your best to inject something intramuscularly, every so often you are going to hit a blood vessel, right? And there are some studies to indicate that approximately 2% or so of all intramuscular injections actually end up in the bloodstream. Anyway, even if you do it carefully, this applies even if you do it carefully. If you simply hand it over, right, hand over the injections to barely poorly trained personnel, then they just don't really care. They will just inject at random, and you probably end up with a greater proportion of people in whom this stuff gets intravascularly injected. And I think it is quite plausible that the most severe side effects that were observed occurred in patients who had the bad luck to receive this injection directly into their bloodstream.
Well, and as you write in your book, there's also pollutants, and they vary from the batch to batch, and that those are another severe threat.
And there were variations between the brands of the vaccine. Moderna had different variations of strengths and pollutants from Pfizer.
So this is Peter Breggin, and this is Ginger Breggin, and this is perhaps the best man I've ever heard, a scientist, in terms of explaining things. Even though I know a lot of this, folks, it gets clearer listening to Michael Palmer talk about it. So stay with us. When we come back, I want to talk very briefly about this issue of why were they so eager to cross the blood-brain barrier. I want to elaborate a little on that from a psychiatric viewpoint. Let's go to break.
Expert opinions, honest debate, and in-depth investigations are what you've come to expect from AmericaOutloud.news. We don't shy away from speaking the truth boldly and plainly. All that's missing is the propaganda that has infected legacy and social media. Get the best of down and dirty, wholesome American speak. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Today's high-stress, on-the-go lifestyle makes it hard to stay heart healthy. Lifestyle changes like exercise and diet are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created Heart and Vascular Health to support three aspects of heart health: cholesterol, blood pressure, and triglycerides, with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 13 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. Natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
And we're back.
Where are we back? We're back on America Out Loud.
That's right. We're back on America Out Loud. This is Ginger Bregan, and we're with my husband, Dr. Peter Bregan, and our heroic guest, Dr. Michael Palmer, who's a medical doctor. We're so glad you're here.
Folks, this interview with Michael Palmer is really one of the most special, I believe, because here is a man who, in a quiet, rational, even caring manner of a good physician, is giving the simplest, most direct, and actually most accurate descriptions of what is going on with the vaccines and even about their early development. And I'm so grateful to you for that, sir. You mentioned they were so desperately working on crossing the blood-brain barrier. And I think there's two tracks to understand that by. One is they really do want to put us all, you know, in a fog. They want to put us all in a more submissive state. They want to kill a lot of us, and we've not gotten to the reasons why about that. But they want to get rid of numbers of us. They want to subdue numbers of us so that they can impose, quite simply, something they talk about all the time, which is a global governance. It's just talked about all the time by these very powerful people and agencies and governments around the world. So they have a whole bunch of techniques for doing this. Psychiatric drugs are the things that I've been fighting against, but we have all of the illegal drugs. The Chinese are pouring them across the border, including the infamous fentanyl. I mean, the administration is doing nothing about it. So the administration is in cahoots with bringing all this stuff across the border. And Michael is giving me a thumbs up about this, and I appreciate that. Then we have also COVID itself causes some of the same problems as the COVID vaccine because the antigen has similarities. In fact, they were identical in the beginning to the actual spike protein. Now there's variations, of course. So the COVID itself and the vaccines, all these things. Oh, and smoking dope, legalizing dope. But whatever you think about freedom and to smoke dope, pushing dope is a disaster for society. So all these things are going into dumbing us down. That's a big part of it. The other part is that probably the most valuable dollar for dollar industry in the world is psychiatric drugs. So if you can develop better methods of crossing the blood-brain barrier, then you can just simply get more toxins across to the brain. Now, if you are talking among your buddies, hey, you know, we're just dumbing these people down. But if you're talking about marketing psychiatric drugs, you say, hey, we can get more and more drugs across the blood-brain barrier, help these people with the multiple diseases we've invented and made up and we saddled them with. So I wanted to kind of just add that as a piece of why they want to get across the blood-brain barrier. There may be a couple of legitimate things like treating MS or some other brain disorders that they have in mind, but the big money is with the made-up psychiatric diagnoses, mass drugging, much of it involuntary, directly involuntary, much of it through lying and pushing people, which is involuntary.
And of course, we know that that controlling people is a desire of the what we call the global predators, those individuals and entities and government administrations that want to take charge and be in control of populations. We saw that in part through the identical kinds of actions that were taken all over the world at the same time when COVID emerged. And the more ways that populations can be dumbed down, can be wounded so that we can't think as clearly. So we have brain fog, whether it's from taking a psychiatric drug or whether it's from the COVID vaccine side effects and so forth, or some other cause, street drugs. The more that we are made docile as a population, the more that we cannot think our way out of this crisis, the easier all of us are going to be to manipulate, to control, and march off to the end of our lives way too soon in many cases.
A simple analogy that can be helpful is think about what it took for the Nazis to subdue, say, the concentration camps before they started exterminating people. And when they did, they had to starve people. They had to kill people and threaten people. They had to put people in uniforms. They had to use various forms of enormous intimidation. And you can accomplish, and then they would become zombie-like. And they talked about them as the people who literally became zombie-like. And you could just tell them what to do and they would zombie and do it, whatever it was. And that can be accomplished with one good dose of all of our antipsychotic drugs, so that you can quiet your entire state mental hospital or your emergency room when violent people or upset or agitated people come in. You give them one dose of a drug that suppresses the overall function of your frontal lobes, which is the definition. They suppress dopamine, the main trunk from deep in the brain to the frontal lobes, and you make them zombie-like. That was, and they knew exactly what they were doing. This is after now the Nazis, when in 1953 and 54, they found this neurotoxin. They knew it was a neurotoxin that mimicked a disease called lethargic encephalitis that suppressed brain function, very similar to the epidemic disease. I mean, this is like insane. And they created an epidemic that still exists throughout the world of encephalitis of the brain with these antipsychotic drugs.
But the psychiatric drugs weren't working fast enough. That's why I think really this explains why there's so much interest in crossing the blood-brain barrier, because the psychiatric drugs,
they work fast enough, but you couldn't get them to everybody.
That's what I meant.
Keep them on them.
Globally speaking, you could. That's what I meant. Thank you. You couldn't actually reach the entire population with them all at once.
That's right.
And get everyone shut down, dulled down, and more manageable.
Right. And those and also, people, I mean, these drugs are reversible, right? I mean, the drug action is reversible. If you wean them off, then the effect will abate, I think, typically.
Not always.
Not always, okay. But I think with most widely prescribed psychiatric drugs.
I do that professionally. I take people off the drugs.
I know. You know more about that than me.
No, yes. I just wanted to say that I wanted to correct. I don't want people being, just like you, I don't want people being afraid. Most of the people that I take off these drugs, and the book, by the way, is Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal. It's the only book by a psychiatrist about how to get off the drugs.
And it's by Peter Bregan.
And it tells you the state of my colleagues. Good. But yes, you can recover if it hasn't been your whole life. And if you, and even if you can't recover, you'll be better off. So even if you still have a glitch here or a glitch there, you'll be able to live again.
Right.
I understand where you're going with that.
And I think the damage done by these vaccines is longer lasting. I mean, it can be pretty much irreversible. I think that's also one goal. I mean, if you manage to get this vaccine in a couple of shots to the majority of the population, you will have achieved some sort of lasting success, I think, unfortunately.
I think you're right, because you can't taper off the vaccine like you can taper off of psychiatric drugs.
Yeah,
it's in your body.
If you have killed off those nerve cells, I mean, they're not going to come back.
That's right. And what about, this is a scientific question of great importance, what's the latest on how long does this process continue in the brain of these poor enslaved cells making antigens, which then attack, and they get the cells attacked?
Yeah, it seems to be surprisingly long-lasting, and I must say I don't myself fully understand how this can last so long.
Yeah,
I mean, people promised that the duration of the spike protein expression would just be a couple of days. And indeed, in vitro experiments on cell cultures would suggest it, that this is indeed the case. Right, if you treat cell cultures with this sort of vaccine, then you will typically see a duration of expression of a couple of days or something like that, and then it will taper off. Now, what came out pretty quickly already in the published literature is that the spike protein could be detected in the bloodstream for several weeks or even months, and then also the nucleic acids could be detected for 1 month or 2 months, depending on the study. There is one study showing the presence of nucleic acid in skeletal muscle, but far away from the injection site. So the injection would have been in the shoulder, and this particular muscle sample was taken from the thigh from a young woman who had been suffering diffuse myositis, skeletal muscle inflammation after the injection. So the nucleic acid could be detected 1 month later.
It was most likely
the mRNA that had been contained in the vaccine. Yes. So it was the vaccine had spread throughout the body. It had caused the spike protein expression in those various muscle cells, skeletal muscles, and caused the immune system to attack. So there you had your inflammation. And this was a fairly long-lasting process. And Arne Burkhardt, the pathologist, I think he has done the largest number of cases. He found spike protein expression using immunohistochemistry. So he used antibodies to detect the spike protein in tissues of those deceased victims. And he found it quite often, several months after the injection. One case that stood out to me was actually the biopsy of a young man, lung bronchial biopsy. And the spike protein was expressed there quite happily and apparently fairly substantial amounts 9 months after the most recent vaccine injection. So it can last fairly long. So it does account, It would account for these reports of fairly long-lasting inflammation of various kinds.
We have written a column about one of the major mechanisms that I think all this happens through is the enormous suppression of the immune system, which takes place from especially the repeated vaccines. So after a while, there's been such overstimulation of the immune system that by various mechanisms that you would know much more about than I do, the actual immune response is weakened. So you haven't got the immune system there to attack the spike protein process, unlike what might be happening in the Petri dish.
It becomes exhausted.
Well, that's probably an aspect of it. It's actually good thinking, yes, indeed.
We have 4 minutes, 5 minutes left.
Okay.
I'm dying to ask you one thing, because I suspect you might have some even special ideas about this. The intentionality of all of this is clear in your book. It's clear in our book. And what we always struggle with is, first, how could human beings do this? And what evidence do we have that they would intentionally want to destroy large numbers of us? Have you got any thoughts on that you want to share? It's such a grim but important issue.
I have, I don't think I have any original insights to offer as to why humans can be so evil. And the intentionality of it, I think it is clear, firstly, because it could be predicted. Then immediately after the vaccine rollout, the bodies started piling up in unprecedented numbers. And this has been going on for several years, and the cover-up is still in progress. The authorities still don't react. The courts of law don't take any action. The regulators don't take any action. The media try to simply beat down the story, not to let it leak out. It's get this right. Physicians who try to alert the public get persecuted, get their licenses taken away, and this kind of thing. I mean, it is all so obviously coordinated, and it all goes in the same direction, that there can be no reasonable doubt of intention at this point. I mean, even if in the beginning some people could console themselves and say, okay, this is just a bad accident or incompetence or negligence and this sort of thing, I don't think that washes anymore. I think it is. And another point is, I mean, at every fork in the road, the road that was leading straight to the cliff was taken. I mean, you had the pregnant women and breastfeeding mothers who were excluded from the clinical trials, but then immediately after the vaccine rollout, they were given the recommendation to get vaccinated. You had people with natural immunity being pressed into vaccination. There was no exemption for them from vaccination, even though it was clear that they didn't need the vaccination and that they would be at increased risk from the vaccination, and so on and so forth. These are just examples. Each time a choice had to be made, the choice was made in such a manner as to maximize the damage. If it were merely incompetence, 50% of the time, actually, you should have taken the advantageous choice, the less harmful choice. This never happened. So there can be no reasonable doubt at this point about the intention.
Two quick thoughts that I want to add as we close. We do know that these people like Bill Gates, Klaus Schwab, and the Chinese communists who are all involved in this all believe in population control and population reduction so that they can more easily handle the herd of us. And that's part of the dumbing down. But the I want to emphasize, we just came out with a column called The Dead Don't Lie. And in it, we looked at the fact that 20,000 deaths were reported to the CDC approximately in the first 3 years. Only at best, 1 in 100 deaths would get reported in the normal process. We know that from research. We know also that to report a death could be the death of your career. So people weren't reporting even as normally as much as they would. So that for the 20,000 reported deaths in the first 3 years, we are estimating, feeling very confident about it, somewhat more than 2 million deaths, more than 100 times.
In the U.S.,
in the U.S. alone. And that's what we're facing when we talk about this murderous onslaught. Michael Palmer, your book, mRNA Vaccine Toxicity. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and we want to make sure that this gets around, isn't it? Thank you.